during that game in Munich last week, I got a text off one of Pogba's family, and it just said, different animal.
You know, Mancini has wanted everyone to have fun, you know.
For the best Euro 2020 coverage, download the OTB Sports app and subscribe to the OTB Football Podcast.
The OTB Podcast Network with GetsetGo. Quick Start car insurance you can sort anytime, online, then bounce on with your day. Get a quote today at GetsetGo.ie.
The News Round on Off The Ball.
With Gillette, we don't just play the game, we change it. Gillette, made of what matters.
Hello there, you're very welcome along again. Tuesday evening here on Off The Ball. On the show tonight, obviously busy evening at the Euros, former Premier League striker Kevin Campbell going to join us 7:30 ahead of Group D decision time. The Scots need to beat Croatia to reach the round of 16. England and Harry Kane are looking for some form against the Czech Republic. So Kevin Campbell is going to join us ahead of kickoff. After 8 o'clock, Jessie Barr has represented Ireland at the Olympic Games. She was there in 2012 in London. She retired 3 years ago, and next month she travels to Tokyo as the Team Ireland sports psychologist. Interesting journey. Never used a sports psychologist in her own career, but now she's going as the Team Ireland sports psychologist. So we'll chat to Jessie Barr after 8 o'clock. And then on the football show, whilst we'll keep you very much up to date on events at Hampden and Wembley, we are chatting to Sonny Pike. He is, and it's the name of his new book, The Greatest Footballer That Never Was. 53106, the text number. We're at Off The Ball on Twitter. The second greatest footballer that never was, Richie McCormack. Hello.
Amen to that, Joe. Amen to that.
And he always did his best, Adrian Barry. Hello to you.
Mr. Reliable. Thank you, Joe. How are you doing?
Very well. First order of business, big announcement, one we're very happy with here on Off The Ball. So the Lions tour gets underway this Saturday. Lions commentary here on Off The Ball right across the next couple of months. All nine matches, we'll have a commentary team of Brian O'Driscoll, Alan Quinlan and Neil Tracy. Thank you very much for the three test matches commencing 24th of July. And then across all the warm-up games, we'll have the likes of Devon Toner, Niamh Briggs, Jack Carty, part of the scene. And it starts this Saturday. Lions taking on Japan. Andy Dunn also involved. He'll be on co-commentary, Andy Dunn, this Saturday for the Lions-Japan game with Neil. 3 o'clock kickoff. Our coverage will be brought to you in association with Vodafone, lead partner of the British and Irish Lions. Adrian Barry, that's very nice news. Looking forward to that.
Yeah, it's class, isn't it? Nathan Murphy's been busy with the contacts book from that list of names, Joe, over the last few weeks. It's brilliant. Really looking forward to it. Very exciting for us to have it. And it really just comes into focus now that the team's been named, obviously, for the first warm-up game. Obviously, some absentees from it, but it does start to... I will be one of those people who'll be glued to it all, I have to say. I'll be really looking forward to it. You'll be watching out for stuff, obviously, in the warm-up games about who's showing a bit of form. There's none of the... I know there's been a lot of conversation over the last while about whether the... and sure, why wouldn't I say this now that we have rights, but I definitely have felt this over the years. I suspend all sort of ideas about it being contrived or anything else. I would have been all aboard the 97 train, Joe, and had that video. We discussed that in the show before, and can't wait. Yeah, looking forward to Saturday, 3 o'clock, I think.
Yeah, 3 o'clock. So Andy Dunn, Neil Tracy kicking things off. This Saturday, all the games live, even the midweek matches on Wednesdays, they'll be live here in the show as well. Brian O'Driscoll, Alan Quinlan, Niamh Briggs, Jack Carty, Devon Toner, Andy Dunn and Neil Tracy calling the action. So tune in if you can't get to a TV, or tune in anyway, frankly. Commentary that good, I think you'll be interested in. So busy show this evening. We'll get to team news in a second. England, Scotland both looking to have decent evenings, maybe for different reasons. The Scots just want to make the round of 16. Sonny Pike will be on the football show. So Sonny Pike, I don't know if you remember Sonny Pike. Certainly people in England, touch older,
really do.
You do, okay, because I didn't. Yeah. So Sonny Pike, the greatest footballer that never was. Nathan spotted this story, and this guy's got a book out. He's 38 years of age now, Sonny Pike, drives a cab over in London. So the greatest footballer that never was. In effect, Sonny Pike in the early 90s was everywhere. I mean, he was on Badil and Skinner. He was on The Big Breakfast. He was sponsored by, and this isn't even the full list, Mizuno, McDonald's, Coca-Cola, a couple of other clothing lines. His legs were insured for £1 million by the age of 12. He spent a week over in Ajax training, and they were pretty impressed with him when he was 10, 11, 12 territory. And they said, we'll keep tabs on you. And in the 2 months after his week at Ajax, He did 64 different media engagements. He was in Hello magazine, you name it. This kid was everywhere. His dad pushing him to the fore. Like, I don't know how good he was. He was obviously very, very talented. A lot of clubs chasing him. But I mean, he was billed as the next George Best, the next Maradona. This was kind of the legend of Sonny Pike. And, well, shock. You'll be shocked to hear it didn't all work out. So he's written a book about the experience. I mean, he was banned for playing football for a year. He told his father, who he felt had been pushing him to do too many commercial things and didn't have his best interests at heart. He felt at the age of 14, after he'd been banned for a year, it's a long story, that one, but in effect, he turned around to his father and said, oh, look, I'm done with all the commercial stuff. And his father said, well, you're not my son anymore. And that seemed to put him off football a touch. He was his last real involvement, maybe when he was kind of prodigy territory, was playing for Crystal Palace against Spurs in a practice game. And he just walked off the pitch with no explanation given. He was just done with football. So he's written a book and he's on the way between 9 and 10. That's Sonny Pike on the way.
He was a regular fixture in the football magazines. Like you mentioned, all the media engagements that he had around then. He was definitely a feature in like Shoot and Match as regards this kid who could like the amount of times he was called the next Pele or the next Maradona was absolutely silly. And I think it's kind of hinted on there that the person behind it all was his father. There's no doubt the kid was talented and, you know, probably deserved that trial with Ajax. But I think his dad saw pound signs where, you know, there was a chance for him to piggyback off his son's name and to make a few quid, and off they went to the races with the several deals they had. And it's one of those sad cautionary tales. But before football stopped being essentially the Wild West, especially in this part of the world, because you did have these opportunists who were willing to put their kids forward for situations that they weren't prepared for, whereas the entire football structure, well, at least most of it now, is a little bit more secure and a little bit more well thought out, that these cases aren't as prevalent, thankfully, as once they were. But Sonny's is definitely a cautionary tale and one that's definitely worth tuning in for a little bit later on.
Yeah. Before we get on to events this evening, Denmark last night, Adrian, were you wiping a tear from your eye?
I was class, wasn't it? Like, they've become, I mean, I was going to say everybody's second team, but we don't really have that luxury.
Yeah. Who is our first team at this championship? Yeah,
probably Denmark. Although I'm still rooting for England. I don't want to sort of second guess myself what happens in a couple of weeks' time when they maybe get to the final and how conflicted I'll be at that point. But I'm all aboard. But it was great. Look, it sure is brilliant. And like, it was fairly somewhat unlikely maybe before the start of the games as well. Just the journey they've been on, sure, it's brilliant. They'll get knocked out at some point soon, I would think. They're shorn of their far and away best player, and they ain't going. It's not going to be Greece 2004 story here, I don't think. But no, brilliant to see them. I think that's probably the limit of what they can expect, but great to see it.
Yeah, they play Wales in Amsterdam on Saturday, so they might fancy that, to be fair.
That's a winnable game.
Yeah, Mikael Damsgaard scored the first goal in 38 minutes, and it was a wonderful goal. It was a beautiful strike, and he took it so early, and the angle his body was at, he wasn't going to be able to get much power in it. He was never going to beat the keeper with power, so he just put that extra bit of loft into the shot with very little backlift. And I thought to myself, I've seen Christian Eriksen do that about 1,000 times. It was such a Christian Eriksen goal. I kind of jumped out a million miles. Second goal was a gift. And then third and fourth goals, really good as well. And just the scenes, if you didn't see the game last night, were joyous, to say the least. And then they all got the phone out and were on live score to make sure they were through. So
it was those 30 seconds, though, that made it last night, because we talked a lot and there's been a lot of talk about the lack of jeopardy in these final round of group matches, given the amount of third place sides going through. But that moment, or those 30 seconds where Denmark thought that the Belgians had taken the lead, so that everything was rosy in their garden, and then the next minute they concede a penalty, which Russia score. And for that few minutes, where they realised the tightrope they were walking on, and things got very, very nervy. That was proper, excellent, exciting tournament football, and the kind of thing you want to see more of in this tournament. But we're shorn of it a little bit given the format.
Yeah, for sure. And I think by the end of this evening, 11 of 16 teams will know they're through. I guess so. I mean, look, there's going to be a degree of dead rubber about the thing. But last night was good, and it kind of worked out format-wise. It's interesting for England this evening, and let's get into the news right now and bring people team news. Your beloved England, Adrian. So if they finish first this evening, and that would mean they have to beat the Czech Republic, then they'll be playing one of France, Germany, or maybe Portugal. Whereas if they finish second, a draw this evening, then they would play Slovakia, Sweden, or maybe a slightly not so scary Spain. So I'm just wondering, does Gareth send the boys out here and say, lads, nil all's just fine, let's finish second? Is that getting too smart with yourself by half?
Yeah. I can't see that at all, particularly with Gareth Southgate. Like, it almost becomes one of the sort of great cliches of sport, that teams at that stage where that becomes an option. That it's almost a cliche to say, well, they are going to go out to try and win the game. But they are. Like, I can't see any other alternative. You can't be second-guessing what's going to happen at the next phase. Like, the last thing he wants is to end up second-guessing that situation and coming a cropper in the next round anyway, and then looks like a, you know, looks like an awful mug and ends up losing his job over it.
Yeah.
Where, you just have to go for it. And I think, like, it's such a... Particularly given the dynamics that these tournaments could take on, a life within themselves... I think sending a message to the players, and by all accounts, we'll get into the team now in a minute, it doesn't look, it looks like he's going to have a bash at it here. Geez, it'd be a dangerous one, wouldn't it? Like,
no, it would. And I think, to be fair, a win and first place does give them home advantage, so that is significant. So I'm sure you have to.
And
go,
Joe, I think they fancy themselves too, you know? Like, I do think that, you know, if he's sending out the message to his players, well, you know, we'd like to avoid Germany, you're looking pretty good. France are a lot of people's favourites. We'd like to start to avoid, if that's the type of message you're sending out at this stage of the tournament, like, it, they are definitely a team who should be making the semi-finals at the very least. I wouldn't imagine it go down that track.
You think Jesse Barr, team Ireland sports psychologist, might think that's a bad message. I suspect you're probably right. So let's crack on then. The news round, as ever, with thanks to Gillette. Put your best face forward with their new and improved razors. Richie, team news is in 8 o'clock kickoffs, of course.
Yeah, across the board in all four sides in Group D, go into tonight's final round of games with hope of making the last 16, pardon me, of Euro 2020. Scotland need a win over Croatia at Hampden. They make one enforced change from Friday's scoreless draw with England, with Stuart Armstrong replacing Billy Gilmore. So Scotland line out with David Marshall in goal. A back three of Scott McTominay, Grant Hanley and Kieran Tierney. Stevie O'Donnell and Andy Robertson provide the width either side of Armstrong and Callum McGregor. And John McGinn is in behind Lyndon Dykes and Shea Adams. England make four changes for their game with the group leaders Czech Republic. Jordan Pickford starts in goal behind a back four of Kyle Walker, John Stones, Harry Maguire and Luke Shaw. Calvin Phillips and Declan Rice continue in midfield. Then the trio of Raheem Sterling, Jack Grealish and Arsenal's Bukayo Saka. Harry Kane continues to lead the line, and both games kick off at 8 p.m.
Yeah, interesting team. So Walker back in. He was very poor in the first game. Luke Shaw obviously was going to be in, I think, the Kieran Trippier experiment was surely not going to continue. But given Chilwell's absence, Luke Shaw continues, and then Harry Maguire comes back in. I guess, look, if you if Harry Maguire is anyway fit and you're intending to play him against a France or Germany, you have to put him in this evening, so that's no surprise. Bukayo Saka is a really lovely player. Like, I really am a huge fan of him, 19 years of age. I just do wonder, penny for Jadon Sancho's thoughts here. He wasn't even on the bench against Croatia. He was unused against the Scots, and Saka with his 6 goals and 8 assists, very impressive. But I would think Sancho with his 17 goals and 16 assists last season is wondering what's going on here. So that looks like he's just not featuring. Anyway, look, they have an embarrassment of riches there. And I presume Phil Foden comes back in for the round of 16 match unless Saka does something exceptional. Harry Kane is probably one of their bigger issues. It's one of the reasons we wanted to get Kevin Campbell on to give us the striker's view on Kane. Can they nurse him back to health a la Alan Shearer 96? Is the question, Adrian.
Yeah, I would have sat him out, Joe, to be honest with you. Like, take him out of the firing line, let the body rejuvenate itself a bit, let the head rejuvenate itself a bit, sort of take him out, give somebody else the option to go in. Like, we were discussing it on the Euro show during the week, and, you know, it's been said that what's Dominic Calvert-Lewin thinking about all this, which I wouldn't have too much sympathy for that. I don't think he's necessarily going to be your guy.
No.
But I do think, just with the what is Southgate going to do with Kane if he doesn't score again or looks out of form again? Maybe the system suits him a bit better. He'll be certainly getting, I think, like, the Saka over Sancho selection, Joe, is interesting. I think you wonder, like, Southgate had said a couple of weeks back that he was protecting Sancho, if I'm right, from you know, the firing line at this level or whatever. He's already, I think he's got about 20 caps, if I'm right, or close enough to it.
Yeah.
So I'm not sure about that. But Saka, 100%, geez, I can't wait now to see him tonight, because I think that they've looked so one-dimensional up to this point. He's the sort of fella that would have, you know, you think maybe against a team like Scotland the last day, coming into it, would have really set light to it alongside Grealish. Like, it does look like a more positive setup, and maybe within that context, and some of it forced obviously with Mount out,
yeah,
maybe within that context Kane just comes to life again, and Southgate looks like a genius come 10 o'clock tonight.
I think if they're going to have Calvin Phillips and Declan Rice as two protecting kind of number six types, there's much more of an onus on their fullbacks this tournament to do something. Like against Croatia, first game out, they didn't cross the halfway line. Like literally Trippier and Walker just basically sat there. And I presume Reece James in particular and Luke Shaw were picked for the Scottish game to get forward. You know, that's kind of Reece James's MO in particular. And I can't think of them combining with Foden or Sterling at all the whole game. So if you're going to have Rice sitting there doing very little creatively and you're going to have Phillips there, who's largely protective as well, their fullbacks need to get more involved. On the Kane thing, I guess the issue, Rich, is we don't actually know what's wrong with him. He's certainly saying, I'm fit, I'm fine. He doesn't look fit. He looks very one-paced. I mean, obviously, there's speculation. Maybe his mind's not on it due to the transfer situation. I find that hard to believe. I think his mind is definitely on this. Maybe he's a bit stressed out with the Spurs situation, but I don't think it should be, you know, I don't think it's the reason he's not in good form. So in terms of, like, do you leave him in? Do you take him out? We don't even know what's wrong with him. Like, it's hard to, you know, prescribe the solution when we kind of diagnose the problem beyond the fact he's not himself.
Yeah, the one thing about strikers is, and it's a blindingly obvious thing to say, is that the only measure of them not playing well is them not scoring. And you almost want to see him, if he's not scoring, do what he did with Spurs in that mid part of the past season, which was providing goals for somebody else at Spurs with Son Heung-min. It could well be Raheem Sterling, or it could well be Saka tonight, or indeed someone like Jack Grealish. But it's asking a lot of him. The one thing about Harry Kane is I think he's mentally tough enough. He's so, anything I've read about him or anything I've seen about him before, he's so singularly focused on his own career that I think he can mentally come through this. And I think he's actually stable enough to be all right through this. But he just needs a goal. And to be honest, that England side should be able to create enough for him to produce something, if not against the Czechs tonight, then definitely in the round of 16. But I wouldn't be very fearful over his form at the moment. Yeah. I just think he just needs something. Just a half chance and he'll be grand.
Just winning off his backside and the rest will come. That's what I'll
His transfer fee is probably going down by the game, is it?
I would think his agent is saying, listen, Harry, wouldn't be the end of the world if you scored a goal this evening or even just ran about a bit more. Galway Mick says, Jude Bellingham is apparently too inexperienced, according to Southgate, the same guy who bossed a Champions League knockout game versus Man City. What have Rice and Phillips done, which is remotely close? Does Southgate not watch the Bundesliga? I mean, if inexperience is the issue, then Bukayo Saka at 19 is doing very well to get in there. One other point, by the way, Adrian, we touched on this with John Bruin last night. Like, I was amazed on Friday that the England were booed off the pitch. John Bruin's of the opinion it's potentially linked to the taking of the knee. So the team are almost on thin ice. You know, they're not given much of a leash here. But World Cup semi-finalists, very impressive 2 years in the meantime. Nations League, all very good. They win their first game in pretty impressive fashion. Nil all against Scotland. Boo! You're thinking, like, this team, they're just, where is the good vibe? Where's the support? We cheered in Ireland 4-0 down to Spain.
Yeah, it's mad stuff. But look, there's a different expectation level from England fans, rightly or wrongly. That's the way it exists. Wayne Rooney obviously had his own incident 2008
10 in South Africa
10
yeah.
sorry of course 10 yeah. And similar scenario, but and also the fact that it's on home soil as well. Like, I think, you know, I had to trot down the road. I'm not sure about it, how linked it would be to the taking the knee stuff.
Maybe not. It's hard to tell.
It feels like it's a much larger swathe of people who are getting involved with the booing them after the game stuff. So but look at fans anyway, no matter where you're from, fickle as all hell. That stuff will be a footnote.
Would we have booed, we collectively, I mean, trying to speak for everyone here, would Ireland have been booed against Luxembourg, do you think?
Yeah,
there would have been boos. Yeah,
a few boos.
There have been before. Like, we kind of remember the stuff in Gdansk and the people still cheering over 4-1 down to Spain. But I vividly recall games where we've been in the original McCarthy era, for sure, there were boos off the pitch at that stage, and there's been disquiet from time to time before. So a game like Luxembourg, absolutely. A game like Qatar, I think, as well, we probably would have gotten boos already. Yeah.
But isn't it different? It's different, though. Like, losing to Luxembourg versus, like, getting ultimately a result in the middle of a championship that is, I know you've got different levels of expectation if you're an England fan, but it's getting you through to the next round.
Totally.
Against Friday your neighbours.
I think Friday night was specific to that crowd that were inside Wembley, because for vast, you know, chunks of that game, they were outzone by a really happy, really joyful Scottish side. And the English side just weren't, the English team on the pitch weren't playing well. They weren't playing at all badly. They were just being pretty frustrated by Scotland. And I think the fans' frustrations poured out in possibly the wrong fashion at the end of the game. I think it will be immediately lifted once they go 1-0 up against the Czechs tonight, and that'll all be forgotten about.
Shoot ahead, Rich. Where are we going next?
Yeah, several German cities have vowed to light their stadiums in rainbow colours after UEFA blocked Munich from doing so. Ahead of the Germany-Hungary game tomorrow night, they wanted to show solidarity with the LGBTQ community in Hungary. They've seen the introduction of several draconian laws under their Prime Minister, Viktor Orban. Munich Mayor Dieter Reiter says UEFA's decision to block the illumination of the Allianz Arena is shameful. The World Health Organization admits it's concerned about the UK's decision to increase Wembley's capacity for the final three Euro 2020 games amid rising coronavirus cases in England. The stadium will now host 60,000 spectators for the semi-finals and final of the tournament, 20,000 more than was previously expected. It also kills speculation that the tournament could be moved elsewhere. German Chancellor Angela Merkel has also expressed worry and says she hopes UEFA will act responsibly over the safety of those matches.
Purely an anecdotal one, so statistically I have no idea if these matches are causing massive issues or not, but I did see a guy tweeting that he came down from Scotland on the train for the match on Friday, and you know, packed train, loads of lads singing, drinking, and he's got COVID, his son has COVID, and now his wife has COVID, and he was just saying like, please be careful, you know. It was a little reminder. I mean, how prevalent that kind of experience is, I don't know, but kind of jumped out at me on Twitter this afternoon. Didn't sound like a fun household to be in at all. So the lines, as we mentioned, live here and Off the Ball, all nine matches, live commentary coming your way, including all the test matches, Brian O'Driscoll and Alan Quinlan involved, Andy Dunn involved for this weekend's game with Neil Tracy on commentary against Japan. Plenty of Irish involvement. We are already dominating this tour. We are dominating.
Circumstances may get in the way, but all seven Irish players in the squad are set to feature for the British and Irish Lions in Saturday's warm-up test with Japan at Murrayfield. Bundiaki and Robbie Henshaw start in the centre with Conor Murray at scrum half. Ian Henderson is in the second row with Tadhg Byrne and Jack Conan in the back row. Tadhg Furlong is among the replacements. Head coach Warren Gatland was speaking today and says they go into Saturday's game at Murrayfield with a clean slate ahead of the trip to South Africa.
We're not fixed in our thoughts in terms of, you know, we haven't got any preconceived ideas about the test side at the moment. We're giving everyone an opportunity, and we want to see who puts a hand up and makes a real impression. And players that play well, you know, we'll get that chance. And, you know, the door's never closed for anyone. And, you know, that was definitely the message in 2017, even before the first test. You know, we said to the players who'd played against the Chiefs on the Tuesday that we hadn't selected the side, and there was still an opportunity for players to get selected in the test side, and a couple of those players put their hand up against the Chiefs that night and were selected in the test side and in the Test 23 as well. So, you know, trying to be clear in our thoughts, but also not being closed off to the possibilities that, you know, we feel like we've picked some real quality men, some great players, and everyone's going to get their chance, and you know, someone's going to come through that a lot of people may not expect, and you know, I think that's the exciting part from the coaching aspect, that you know, we're not fixed on who we think is going to be making the testing.
That was a lot of words to say not very much, wasn't it?
Gats is fond of that.
God. So Chris Shields, bad news for Dundalk. Yeah. He's been, I mean, he was excellent even in their European campaign just gone. He's a big player for them. He's out the door.
He surely is. He's confirmed he's leaving Dundalk today. The influential midfielder has won 5 SSC Electricity League titles and 3 FAI Cups during his 9.5 years at Oriel Park. He was originally signed by the late Sean McCaffrey ahead of the 2012 season, which Dundalk found themselves at no end of bother. Shields' final game will be against Derry City on Friday night, after which he's expected to join Linfield.
What do you read into that, Rich? Is this I don't like the way the club is going type thing, or could it be a better financial offer? Because, I mean, he's been such a mainstay down through the best period in the club's history.
He has. He mentions in his parting message to the Dundalk fans today that he has received an offer which he essentially can't refuse. You look at his age profile, he turns 31 later on this year. It's probably his last chance to get a pretty big contract in essentially domestic terms anyway. So if it's a financial aspect, you can't blame him. But also, you look at what's been coming out of Dundalk over the past while and the news that certain players weren't happy about Finney Perth's return. We don't know if Chris Shields is one of those, but the optics of it aren't good to see him leaving so soon after Perth's re-arrival, I guess you could say, at the club.
Yeah, okay. Well, wish him well. So, well, I mean, look, we have several chances of Olympic gold you don't often hear the golf mentioned, but it's one of our best chances of Olympic gold, or certainly a medal.
Yeah, King of the Midlands, Will O'Callaghan, is delighted about Offaly's representation in the Olympic Games, because Shane Lowry has joined Rory McIlroy being confirmed as Ireland's qualifiers for the Olympic golf tournament in Tokyo. The 60 qualifiers for the tournament are based off the official world golf rankings taken after the US Open. None of the medalists from Rio 5 years ago, those are Justin Rose, Henrik Stenson or Matt Kuchar, managed to qualify this time around.
Lowry, McIlroy coming into form, Adrian. I'm smelling a medal there.
Yeah. I mean, I'd be interested to see who they'll be up against, but interesting kind of dynamic, Joe. Like, a couple of players that you could easily see. What's the expression for the times that we have? The getting to the emotional pitch of it. Yeah. But in a very real way, to be fair. Like, I think they might. It'll be an interesting watch. Yeah.
Sometimes.
What do you think? What do you think? Nobody cares about what I think.
No, they have a great chance. Absolutely, great chance. And it'd be interesting. You know, sometimes you see text messages coming in or tweets. There's a bit of a disconnect, I think, with McIlroy. I can't work out sometimes, is that down to geography or just a personality thing? And Lowry's one of the lads, and everyone loves Lowry. I mean, you wonder if McIlroy's standing there in a podium and Aaron Levine is blaring out. That might be a moment of healing, I think. I think suddenly McIlroy would go up in stock in this part of the world, in the 26 counties. That's if it is geographical thing. I don't know.
It's a buy-in thing for these two lads, for both of them, and for everybody that's going over to Tokyo in terms of the golf, because I was there 5 years ago, talked to Padraig Harrington and Seamus Power, who were representing Ireland at that time, and both of them were exceptionally proud to be Olympians and to be representing Ireland at the Olympic Games. And similarly, Justin Rose was absolutely on board with representing Team GB at the Olympic Games, and he went on to win gold. So you essentially need to have that mindset that you're going to go and represent your country as best you can at this thing, because it is different from a regular golf tournament, and it will probably play different. And I don't know what kind of course they're going to be playing on Japan. They're playing in essentially a converted sandlot over in Rio. But this time around, again, I think it'll need real genuine buy-in from those two players and from all 60 in the field to go and achieve something this time.
Mm-hmm.
They'll have to get the five rings tattooed, won't they, both of them?
Yeah. A few.
They should do that as a team bonding thing in advance. The two of them go together and get the five rings tattooed on.
But they hang out.
I'd be doing it if I in the very unlikely event that I was to ever become an Olympian, I would definitely get that done.
I think Ricky Fowler got it done. I think some of the golfers were a little bit reticent to kind of bill themselves as Olympians.
Too classy, Joe.
No, I think some of them were like, oh, there's people here who spent their whole lives perfecting their craft, and this is the pinnacle. And for me, this is just like another week, and I have to go to Memphis next week for WJC, and I played a major last week. You know, it's just another stop on the schedule. So I think some of them were a bit squeamish about saying I'm an Olympian in the truest sense. But those two in a night out getting Olympic rings tattooed, I like that. They hang out together.
Would you, Joe,
a bit now.
If you were to become an Olympian, would you get it done?
I probably would, but I mean,
the smallest possible tattoo in the most indiscreet possible place.
you can see it with like a microscope on my heel. I'm probably not a cool enough person to pull off tattoos, I think it's fair to say.
You're not a tattoo kind of guy?
Precisely. So, fellas, we're done. Thank you so much. Richie McCormack.
Cheers.
Thank you. Adrian Barry.
Awesome.
Thank you.
The OTB Podcast Network with GetZetGo. Quickstar car insurance you can sort anytime, online, then bounce on with your day. Get a quote today at GetZetGo.ie.